Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. With us, as always, is Chris Elogi and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the good folks out there, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah. So, everybody out there, listen to us in America and around the world. This episode is for April 29th, 2023, last show for the month. Next time you hear from us, it'll be May, which means we'll be getting closer to summer, which, you know, it's already kind of feeling like summer down here. Been getting progressively warmer and more humid and also a tad bit rainier, but that's also kind of just April in general. But yeah, so what happened this week? Well, this week was more or less, the theme of this week was fucking around and finding out the week, because we had two very infamous news individuals getting fired from their respective networks. We had a certain someone, a former president, formally getting charged with rape years after the fact, unfortunately, but still, it's happening. Steven Crowder is getting divorced, and we found out that, no, he isn't just a piece of shit as a character. He really is a piece of shit in real life. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, just a bunch of other things also happened this week, including just one of the dumbest fucking ad controversies that's ever come into existence, and makes me realize that maybe the internet was a mistake. But we'll get to all that. And, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment stuff and a couple of science-related things to talk about as well. So, yeah, we'll have all that and this more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. But before we get to all of that, let's start off this show, as we traditionally do every week, going through all the things we've been doing up to today. And, as always, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Dealing with rain here this weekend going into next week.
Yep.
It seems like it's going to be a big issue.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, temperature has been fine. It's in the 50s right now. Maybe getting around 60, but nothing too bad for the time being.
Yeah.
But yeah, for things I've been doing this week, I've been watching a bunch of stuff. I watched Baby J, which is the new John Mulaney special on Netflix, that deals with his rehab. Basically, it's the vast majority of it, as he definitely addresses it pretty early on with a nice little song, silly song that he sings about how his reputation and vibes are now different than the last time people saw him. It's like, oh, you've had a weird few years. I've had a weird few years. You know, all this going on. Yeah, it kind of goes into the intervention from a bunch of his comedian friends and such, and how he took it as, you know, somebody who was 2 hours late to it because he was buying drugs, that kind of thing, and being very mad that his comedian friends all decided before he came in that they weren't going to do any bits, so he was just super bored during the whole thing and all that. And talking about experience going to rehab and his life sort of after that, all that kind of stuff. And has a funny moment, like, before he really gets into the show, noticing that there's a kid in the audience and being like, you know, how old are you? And, you know, 11 years old, and finding out he's in fifth grade and being like, well, this is going to be weird for you, because, you know, being talking a lot about drugs and all that, and relates, like, when his intervention happened, be like, yeah, that happened when you were in third grade. So that's cool. Kind of stuff. It's a fun stand-up special. Definitely worth checking out. For other things on Netflix, I started watching Sweet Tooth Season 2, the new season of the comic adaptation where things happened at the end of the first season, and characters are sort of in precarious situations they want to get out of, potentially getting rescued. And I'm still like, I'm on the third episode, so not too far in. Like the first season, the episodes are about an hour each, so it takes a bit to get through it. So I'm looking forward to working my way through it, but still been enjoying it. And the other Netflix thing is Power Rangers Once and Always. The new, it's kind of just a reunion movie, essentially, where there's a big new threat that is Robo Rita, I think it is, the big bad, comes back in robo form that threatens the world and starts capturing Power Rangers from the various other teams, but you don't see much of any of them. It's mainly like the classic original team. And they do a whole thing where Trini gets killed off during a big fight, and do like a memorial for her character, in spite of the fact that, you know, the actress died, you know, 30 years ago about, for that. So they do a big thing there, and then deal with her daughter, who ends up getting involved there. And it's kind of interesting, like, jumping back into this, not paying attention to anything else, and being like, oh, Zach the Black Ranger was in Congress, and sort of quits that to help out with Trini's daughter and that kind of thing. And I guess Billy, he's a rich businessman, like tech businessman, who runs the Power Rangers sort of headquarters in the like basement of the building where the rest of his employees work, kind of a whole thing. But yeah, it's like an hour long, nothing too big. Does a pretty good job with what it does. So there you go for that. For games, I finally beat Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I finally got to finishing that before Survivor came out. Enjoyed that a lot. That game still holds up pretty well, especially on PS5, where they, you know, get over a bunch of its frame rates and other sort of issues there with that version. That I still like the way that it's janky at times, with a lot of its like animations and such. So still liking it a lot. I've been playing some Survivor. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. Also been playing Breath of the Wild because I'd like to beat that before Tears of the Kingdom comes out.
Good point.
Did a stream of that. Beat the fourth of the Divine Beasts, which was for me the lizard one that was hanging out in Death Mountain. Which I remembered why I didn't like rush to doing that one, because it's, you know, surrounded by this mountain with lava all over the place. And a very sort of tall mountain that you have to climb up the sides a lot. So it's a bit tough to get into at times, but I figured that out. Finished up the Divine Beast, so had the last one that was shooting its beam at the at Hyrule Castle where Ganon's at. I just looked around, did some more side stuff. I'll probably stream some more trying to beat it next weekend, but in the meantime, I'll probably do some side quests and dealing with that. And yeah, that game just controls weird. It's just for all the weird stuff they're doing in that game, it's really easy to just accidentally throw weapons around when you're not realizing it and all that kind of stuff. But I also have all the DLC, so I need to look into what I get out of all that. So there's that. And yeah, the last one, Rocket League, they have an event going on this weekend or for the next couple of weeks here. I forget what it's called. It's like driving days or something like that. So just working my way through that. And that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yes, Teresa. What have you been up to?
Yeah, other than playing my usual Vampire Survivors, and I didn't even put it on the show notes, but Kingdom Two Crowns, because, yeah, I play it about every week. I just fired up Animal Crossing this afternoon and let all of my villagers tell me about how I had not been there for a year and 3 months. So yeah, it's kind of fun to get back in, and I got all my weeds taken care of, and you know, now I'm just kind of roaming around doing the stuff that you do. But I wasn't here last week, but I think it was last week that we had finished up Picard, and then we finished up Mandalorian, so we're current on those. Working through this season of Bob's Burgers, we've kind of taken a break, and we just did the Christmas episode yesterday. So I'm guessing we probably have maybe 5 episodes that we're behind on now, something like that. And then in the ongoing weird spin up of movies, I mean, you just never know what we're going to end up watching. We watched Hot Fuzz, which I'm sure I've seen it before, but I'd forgotten almost all of it. So, that was pretty funny. And I really bet, Sean, what's his face, could, move and jump as well as he did in that movie. but it's, I guess, kind of quite old now. But, you know, it's all good. I think that's about it for me, though. What about you, Brandon?
Well, I have been taking advantage of my, PS Plus subscription, and I've been playing, well, a couple things. I'm still playing Paradise Killer, which is a sort of a game heavily inspired by Danganronpa, but is much more like high concept in nature. Danganronpa is essentially, Saw, but with, high schoolers, basically. Paradise Killer, on the other hand, is about a group of immortals who have their own pocket dimension in reality, who are trying to bring back their, revive their alien gods from beyond, the universe, and are doing it by basically starting these cults and sacrificing millions of people that they regularly kidnap. And then someone kills the leaders of that group, and you are a former member of that group who were exiled for getting conned into doing something by one of those old gods, and now you have to find out who killed all of them.
Huh.
Yeah. And it's also like the whole aesthetic is like it's vaporwave as fuck. Yeah, it's like it, that it's like on an island that's like you're always on the coast, and there's always like it's either blue skies or there's a sunset, and the music is very vaporwave-ish, and the aesthetic is very vaporwave-ish. you carry around a thing that's kind of like an iPad that you can basically give it like vaporwave-like backgrounds and screensavers and stuff. It's pretty neat. But basically what you learn is that, as it's kind of like one of those things, it's kind of like Murder on the Orient Express, where you realize that, wow, pretty much everyone here has a motive to kill these people. And you're basically trying to find out who exactly is the individual that killed them. But yeah, it's actually pretty fun, and actually pretty funny at times. It's also got some pretty good world building and some pretty sneaky puzzles in there as well. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And the other game I've been playing, it's something I tried to start a while back, but, either I wasn't, like, in the mind space to get it, or just I lost interest, or something else along came, which is The Outer Wilds, which, of course, is a now very much a much-loved independent creation, created by the folks at... Actually, it's just Outer Wilds, not The Outer Wilds. I got that mixed up with Outer Worlds. But it was made by Mobius Digital, which is a company that was co-founded by Masioka, the guy who played Hiro in Heroes, who I actually found out fairly recently, before he was an actor, he actually got his start as like a digital effects artist at Industrial Light and Magic. He's actually, like, his stuff has been used in a lot of movies. He worked on the Star Wars prequels, which, the writing was terrible, but visually they were pretty good.
Yeah.
But he also created the water help program, the water effects that would later be used in James Cameron's Avatar. And yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. And basically he ended up founding Mobius Digital because all of his projects kept getting put into development hell. And he decided, screw it, I'll go and just start my own company.
That's valid.
Yeah, and he's one of the four producers on this game. Basically, I gotta admit, it's actually definitely one of the best games I've ever played. But it's also challenging because it's basically a game where, like, you're part of this group of aliens who are on this planet, and they decide they're going to start a space program, and so you decide to go into, you're going to be the guy who's got one of the groups, one of the next, you're not the first, but you're one of the current who's fixing to launch, and you launch off, and, you know, there's a whole galaxy that you're working with, so that there's your home planet, and there's some other planets around you, there's your moon, and a bunch of other stuff, and, you know, it's... Unlike space travel and like No Man's Sky, which is a lot more intuitive, I think. Outer Wilds, the space travel here is in some ways a bit more realistic because, you know, you're in space, which means you're going in three dimensions with no gravity, which means, you know, every bit of movement is going to affect how you move. And also, remember, these are planets. They don't remain static. They're constantly in orbit. So, you know, when you're trying to get one, you have to make sure you don't accidentally, like, you know, slingshot over the planet you're trying to, you're coming from, because then it'll wreck your landing gear. Or you don't want to, you know, accidentally, you know, autopilot towards a planet that happens to be on the opposite side of the sun, because, well, then you'll just fly into the sun. And remember, the sun has gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So don't want to fly too close or else it will pull you in and sizzle, sizzle. But it's got this really intriguing sort of narrative about this old alien civilization called the Nomai who, you know, their ruins are like everywhere in this galaxy. And you can find like remnants of their cities and their old technology and stuff like that. And, you know, their writing system, you have to have, like, an actual translator gadget to translate it because their writing is, like, it's sort of like this weird sort of swirly pattern that tends to, like, arc off as the conversation goes because they literally, like, write stuff down and then someone who's in the conversation will then, like, write another, like, a response arcing off from the other one. And then, you know, it just keeps going. And, you know, their tech is, like, really... The tech actually kind of reminds me of, like, the puzzles in The Witness because it's based around, like, moving a shiny little ball to, like, certain parts of, like, this mechanism so you can, like, turn it on. So, like, if there's an elevator, you move the little ball out of the side and then you move it up to, like, the chamber at the top to go up or the chamber at the bottom to go down or, you know, stuff like that. And then here's the other thing. Every time you die, you basically wake up back at where the game originally began. You remember everything that you just had, and it's still like kept in your ship's log, but it's like the universe reset. And I'm actually getting to a point where I think the sun looks like it's fixing to go nova at any moment, which means it's probably going to kill me again. So there seems to be like this time loop thing that's happening as well. It's really fascinating and legitimately a lot of fun. I will admit, though, because of how perilous that like space flight and stuff in this game can be, you do have to be on your guard and a little careful when you're traveling and like landing, because it's real easy to mess up and either break something or just straight up die. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Highly recommend it. I cannot believe that I didn't start playing it, like, seriously until recently. But yeah, it's really good. And, like, it's all stuff that you can do, like, at your own pace. There's no real, like, sequence of stuff that you have to go in order to, like, do the whole game. You can basically go in any sort of sequence that you want to. But yeah, it's really good. And I honestly can't wait to see what this developer comes up with next, because this was some good stuff. But other than that, nothing much. Books, still reading constantly, as always. I finally got a collection of Kenji Miyazawa's stories called Once and Forever, which has all of his, not all of his. He wrote like over 100 stories in his career, but this one's only got like maybe 30 of them. But it does have like the ones that are generally considered to be his best, with the exception of his two novel-length stories, you know, specifically Night on the Galactic Railroad. I've actually ordered a copy of that specifically and should be in the mail. But yeah, I've been doing that. And what else? Oh, yeah. I recently read this amazing novel. It was a first-time novel. It's called Natural Beauty. It was written by a woman named Lin Ling Huang, who is her day job is like as a concert violinist. And it's basically about this Chinese-American woman who used to be a concert pianist who had to basically go leave the field and go do other stuff because her parents suffered an accident. Now they're basically like paralyzed and in an assisted living community. And she ends up getting hired onto this place that's like, imagine if Goop was ran by Elon Musk instead of Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah, and it's basically sort of like about like how the whole wellness industry is essentially a giant cult that preys on women's fears and doubts and all the really like morally and ethically ambiguous stuff that they do to produce their products and sell them. And then it just goes into full-on body horror. it's pretty good. But, yeah, other than that, nothing much, except it's not summer yet, but it's starting to feel like it down here. we had a downpour today, and so, you know, it's been in, like, 79, 80 range. It's, like, 66 now, but, I mean, it's after 8:30, so, you know, it's getting on the cold side. I mean, not, obviously, 60 isn't cold, but for a spring, that's a little on the chillier side. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So, anybody want to add anything else before we move on?
No.
Alrighty then. Well, then it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, I wanted to talk about a figure whose work, especially if you're a gamer and especially if you like RPGs and are a Nintendo fan, you've definitely encountered this man's work before, but his sort of story of how he got to making the game, making this stuff, and kind of what his career in general is, and especially where he came from, how he got famous, and how he could only really get famous in a country like Japan is, well, you'll see. His name in Japan, he's known as Itoi Shigesato. Or, as we know him over here, Shigesato Itoi. Now, does that name sound familiar to any of you guys? And if it is, don't say anything. But does the name sound vaguely familiar?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, you're going to know who he is by the time I'm finished with this. But, okay, so here's the thing. Shigesato Itoi, he's currently 74 years old. And back in the late 70s and early 80s, he became very famous as a copywriter. Now, do you guys know what copywriting is?
Yep.
Not copywriting as in copyright, as in R-I-G-H-T, but copywriting as in W-R-I-T-I-N-G.
Yes.
Okay, do you know what that is?
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, writing copy, or in Japan they call it catch copy, because, you know, that's what you're supposed to be doing. You're writing catchphrases that, you know, catches the eye of the potential customer. Now, it's not unusual for writers or creative types to actually get started in copywriting. Such literary luminaries like, for example, F. Scott Fitzgerald got his start working at a relative's advertising firm as a copywriter. And, of course, he became one of the seminal American novelists. And then, of course, from literary classics to literary shit, we have the likes of James Patterson, who, before he began, you know, I hesitate to call it what he now does writing, but before he started doing that, he actually worked as an advertisement firm. He was the guy who came up with the Toys R Us Kid marketing campaign for Toys R Us back in the 80s. Chigusato Itoi became famous as a copywriter. Period. Because for some reason in the 80s, during the economic boom that was happening, copyright, for some reason, there was a whole part of Japanese culture that became enamored with the idea that you could take an entire business concept and campaign and shrink it down into a really small amount of words.
Okay.
And that's exactly what Itoi did. He started off as he was basically like the one of the whole group who, for whatever reason, managed to become super famous as a copywriter. Now, he wasn't necessarily the only guy. There was another guy named Ramon Nakajima who started off as a copywriter who eventually got an advice column in another paper. And he eventually became a really successful, like, cult novelist and actor. So, you know, it's not unusual for someone to do that, for someone to become famous as a copywriter and then later as a literary figure. No. Chigusato Itoi specifically became famous for his copywriting work. And he would then branch out using those connections to expand on that. For example, in 1981, he met up with a writer you may have heard of named Haruki Murakami. They authored a collection of short stories called Yume de Aimoshu, Let's Meet in a Dream. He then branched out into writing essays for popular journals. He wrote song lyrics. He became a voice actor. He was the original voice actor for the professor character in My Neighbor Totoro. And in fact, he did a lot of the copy work for Studio Ghibli back in the day. But then he also started meeting with the people at Nintendo. Right around the early 90s, he got his hand on the original Dragon Quest. He had been playing video games because he had suffered a back injury, and his doctor recommended that he do something that he could do that could help him, you know, pass the time while he was recovering for it. And so he ended up buying a Famicom. So, you know, he played Mario and he played Zelda, but he specifically liked Dragon Quest. He liked the fact that it used what was a very unconventional medium in order to tell a story. But the thing is, anybody who's played the original Dragon Quest will know the story of the original Dragon Quest is very basic and cliche and tropey. Granted, for Japan, it was pretty original because, you know, Western fantasy wasn't really a big thing over there yet. But he looked at this and he thought, man, I could do better than this. And so he started stewing around this idea that he had in the back of his head. And one day he ended up meeting none other than Shigeru Miyamoto. And while he was there, he sort of pitched his idea to Miyamoto about this. He said, I want to make a video game that sort of makes fun of a lot of the sort of medieval tropes about, you know, that happens in Dragon Quest. So, like, take a Dragon Quest type plot, but instead of having it happening in medieval times, let's have it happen in, say, modern day America. And instead of a hero with a sword and a shield, let's make it a little boy with a baseball bat and a red cap. And instead of being some kind of, you know, weird, all powerful demon king as the enemy, let's make it some alien invaders that are trying to invade and take over the world. Is any of this starting to sound vaguely familiar?
I have an inkling.
And finally, instead of using magic, let's give them something called psi power. Do you get it now?
Nah, my brain's in neutral.
All right, then I'll help you. The first game of this series eventually became known, this game series that came out that he ended up writing and directing, that was originally sold to the Japanese consumers as, oh, hey, here's a game that Shigesato Otoi made. It's called the Mother Trilogy. We over here know it as Earthbound.
Yeah.
So, the first game in that series, of course, didn't actually come over here in the U.S. until much, 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 much later. Once, Nintendo finally decided to put Earthbound on the Nintendo eShop, they decided, maybe it would finally be a good idea to. They had actually already, fully translated the thing. It just never got released over here. Bring the original Mother over here as Earthbound Beginnings. And, of course, there was the last game in that trilogy, which of course was Mother 3, which unfortunately never made it over here, but you can play basically as a unofficial ROM hack over here. Let's be honest, the Earthbound, when it originally came out over here, it was, to say it was moderately successful would be an overstatement. It kind of bombed, and mostly it was because of, well, for one thing, it was its unconventional packaging, because the game originally came in, instead of like a standard Super Nintendo box, it came in this giant, book-sized box, because it came with this, helper's guide or whatever, not like a walkthrough, but basically it's sort of equivalent to it was basically like a Nintendo Power issue, basically, in size. It also had a rather unpleasant marketing campaign based around, scratch and sniff cards. Yeah, that's never a good idea. And overall, it was just really weird when it, the Earthbound games, they're weird. They're very weird games. They do become, anyone who's ever played them can tell you, they become batshit crazy towards the end, especially Earthbound. But at the time this game came out, when it was going up Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger and other games like that, it kind of just sank into the swamp. But the game actually did, all three games did pretty well over in Japan, even if development of them pretty much always had some huge issue with them. Earthbound in particular basically only managed to survive as a game because of Satoru Iwata. Yes, the late Satoru Iwata, who eventually became, head of Nintendo. He was the lead programmer, and he basically rebuilt the entire game from scratch. Once it looked like the game was basically dead in the water. And then the third game, Mother 3, was originally supposed to be a Nintendo 64 game, but it ended up getting scrapped halfway and ended up going over to the Game Boy Advance. And of course, anybody who's ever played Mother 3 will tell you that game is a massive mindfuck compared to the other two. And the other two are already massive mindfucks. So after that, he didn't really do too much game development. He did a bass fishing game called, Itoi Shigesato no Bassori number 1, which, because, he was really into fishing right around that time. He also was the producer and supervisor for the, two Monopoly Famicom games, Monopoly and Monopoly Game 2. And he also had another game called Cabbage, which was like a breeding simulator for what was then called, what was the 64DD? Do you guys remember that? It was supposed to be like a disk drive attachment to the Nintendo 64 that ended up,
I remember, they talked about it, but it never happened.
Yeah, that was going to be one of the head projects that was going to come out. And he was one of the main designers, and it ended up getting canceled. And he hasn't really done anything since. Video game wise, but he has done a bunch of other stuff besides that. In 1997, he bought a Macintosh and connected to the internet, and he started a website called the Almost Daily Itoi Newspaper, which is still going, might I add. It's basically this online newspaper where he does a lot of the editorials and production, and he interviews a bunch of people and writes essays and stuff about things happening in his life on, or ideas on philosophy and, you know, stuff like that. He also did like a series of day planners with some sketches that he did for covers. A lot of his interviews have been collected into books, and they're a best-selling book series. A lot of the essays that he writes for the site's front page are compiled into books. And in 2010, he actually made his debut as an actor for the film version of Haruki Murakami's classic book, Norwegian Wood. And so, yeah, he does a lot of stuff these days. And in Japan, the Mother Trilogy is considered to be like one part of this dude's just crazy, huge, like all-encompassing career that does just that has been involved in just about everything. And of course, as most people know, Earthbound originally kind of failed when it originally came out over here, but it eventually became popular again. You know why?
Well, everybody got FOMO about it. Because they missed it the first time. No?
No, it's because of a little game called Super Smash Brothers. Remember? Because Ness ended up being one of the main characters you could play. And everybody was wondering, wait, who is this kid? I remember all these other guys. Who is this kid? It's the same thing that happened with the Fire Emblem series. Where, you know, Smash Brothers Melee came out and people were like, hey, who's this Roy dude? Who's this, you know, Marth kid, you know? But, yeah, and then, of course, later it would inspire a bunch of other games, specifically Undertale, which is now especially big and popular. And all of this started because this guy who became famous originally as a copywriter decided he wanted to try his hand at game design. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? only in Japan, man. By the way, if you're wondering why, like, copywriters aren't really celebrities in Japan anymore, it's because of the oil shocks that basically crashed their economy. Nobody gave a shit anymore.
Oh.
But yeah. Okay, so with that out of the way, it is now time for the proper show proper. I mean, not the proper show proper, just the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. Get ready, folks, because we got a few of them to talk about. First and foremost, this shit out of Montana, which, might I add, is one of the least populated states in the country for its size. So over there, they have a state representative named Zoe Zephyr, who is a trans woman, a Democratic representative, and there's been this thing where they've been trying to pass a bunch of anti-trans health care bill, and being that, of course, Ms. Zephyr is herself trans, you would think that she would definitely have something to say about this. But the state house has basically done everything it possibly can to cut her off and make sure she cannot speak. It eventually got so bad that her own, you know, constituents went into the house, into the actual building, and chanted, "Let her speak, let her speak," while she held up the microphone so that they could, you know, everybody could see what was happening. And so this week, the Montana House of Representatives voted to censure Democratic Representative Zoe Zephyr for wanting to speak against their terrible anti-trans health care bill. And then they banned gender-affirming care for trans minors. Yeah. Now, of course, Teresa, being a mother of a trans minor, mm-hmm. I'm saying that you've probably got some opinions here.
Oh, I have a lot of opinions.
Go ahead. Unleash hell.
Well, it's absolutely terrible. And everything that everybody says about them trying to basically genocide our kids is 100% true. And everything everybody writes and everybody's, this is tinfoil hat conspiracy about.
No, it isn't. No, it is not. It is not tinfoil hat conspiracy at all.
It's not.
They have made their intention perfectly clear.
Oh yeah, and state after state after state is trying to silence and censure their own lawfully elected representatives. They are coming so very, very close to making it be almost effectively illegal to not be them.
Yeah.
And what they don't seem to realize is that there's a lot of people who are not like them.
I would hesitate. I would go forward to say as in most people are not like them. In fact, by all accounts, the vast majority of Americans really do not see the trans issue as a problem at all. And it's mostly just like it's very obvious why they're using this as a wedge issue and why they seem to be so desperate. The reason is the GOP is facing a serious demographics crisis. It's pretty clear now that Gen Z, you know, is pretty firmly on center of left at the very least right now. And, you know, it's why they've been trying to raise the voting age to like, say, 21 instead of 18 or limit the franchise, you know, because, you know, they know that their entire agenda is not only unpopular, it is becoming increasingly untenable. And now they're having to resort to these blatantly anti-democratic measures because they know they can't win in a fair election. And so now they have to latch on to these niche, you know, culture war issues as hard as they can because they don't have anything else.
They don't.
They don't have any ideas. And the idea voters don't care for them.
Yeah, I think they do have an idea. Their idea is full fascism.
Fascism,
and,
yes.
Yeah, and we're already there, but they're steamrolling to spread it even faster.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a desperation move.
Yeah.
They have this existential notion that their time is limited. And so they're trying to get as much as they can because, you know, once the current boomer generation dies off, that's it for them.
Hopefully it's, you know, everything sputters out with the younger, angry, upset, delusioned people.
Yeah. And unless the GOP changes course, it's going to go the way of the Whig Party.
Yeah.
It will be a footnote in history.
Yeah, it's infuriating to watch this happen for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like every single day I'm like, okay, which state fucked it up this time? Oh, wait, now it's Nebraska. Oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely the whole thing about the southern states and the flyover states. Just because of the gerrymandering and some, you know, sometimes from the local historic culture. How can I say that politely?
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many places that we have to mark off of our map as this place in our own fucking country of birth.
Uh-huh.
Country of birth of my family since the goddamn pilgrims.
Yeah.
And we are not welcome there. And it is a danger, not just to our child, but some of these states are a danger to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it just, I wish it was not what it is. So bad. Yeah. And I can't wait for us to turn the corner on this. And I hope that we don't stumble and skid out and miss the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People that are sort of academics about the Holocaust have noted that like we're in the late 30s in this whole situation because they are trying to legislate it to be illegal to be transgender.
Yeah.
In any way, for the most part.
And
sort of even gotten it to the point that very popular in Miami, Dwayne Wade, former NBA player, has said, like, we're moving out of the state because we don't feel safe here.
Yeah, because he has a trans daughter, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like you've literally driven one of the
most acclaimed, one of the most popular and acclaimed living athletes in your state's history.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, you've just driven them out of there because of these, you know, laws here.
Yeah.
And it's not a huge surprise that they're generally unpopular because these are just attacks on families.
Mm-hmm. And Florida in particular is a really good example of, like, it's like watching an ant farm, like from an outsider's end, of how a state slides into authoritarianism. Because I don't know if you noticed recently, but the GOP dominated state Congress over there, they are voting to remove the requirement that if the governor runs for president of the United States, he has to resign as governor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You start to realize, like, I'm like, I told somebody, I was like, just watch. They're going to try and make it so he can be governor for life. Because that's like the next step.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ron DeSantis is a character that is not going to get the presidency.
No, because as terrible as he is, he doesn't have the type of dark charisma that
Trump has. Trump there, just to use a weird kink term, uh-huh. Ron DeSantis is a sub.
Yeah.
He's not a dom. Trump is a dom.
Yeah.
You just see him after the hurricane stuff with Biden around. He's very much like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We need the money, sir.
Yeah.
What can I do for you kind of thing? And that's just the way he is. When he gets to talking on his own, he acts like a big boy. Mm-hmm. But when he's around other adults in the political sphere who have more clout than him, he turns into a submissive person.
And he especially gets pissed off if you bring up about the time he worked in Guantanamo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We should mention that.
Yes, he used to be one of the guys that tortured people in Guantanamo.
Well, he was supposed to be playing good cop, bad cop. It's like, what can I do to make your stay more enjoyable? And then he would have them do exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
They never confirmed that he also tortured people.
He also likes people too. Yeah. And they had a couple of former Guantanamo detainees. Like, they've shown him his pictures, like, yep, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Like whether or not he was actively involved.
And everything. Like, yeah, now whether for speeding. Yeah, now
whether or not he was actively involved in the torture is debatable, but he definitely helped facilitate it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. But yeah, for this whole thing, it's ridiculous that people have voted these people in and are getting forced out of being able to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what district she represents, probably one of their bigger cities.
Yeah.
That's just completely undemocratic and very much a fascist move.
Yeah.
Because they know that she could rip them to shreds. And all they've really successfully done is do the Barbara Streisand effect on this.
Yeah.
Make her a bigger name.
They've made her a national figure. You would think
much like the two Justins in Tennessee.
Yeah. The exception, of course, here that they didn't expel her. They only censured her. But
yeah,
it's the same effect. And they should have, be smart enough to realize that. But I'm also starting to realize that these guys aren't just fascists. They're also phenomenally stupid.
Yeah.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, because this is a situation where I believe their stations in the House, they just have buttons to be like, hey, I'd like to speak here.
Yeah.
And she just shows pictures of it like, mine's here, but they haven't let me speak, said anything for days here. And then obviously as she was sort of publicizing this, her constituents come in to protest and a bunch of them get arrested. And then she gets threatened with getting censured or expelled, but she only got censured, which essentially means she is not allowed to be in the room doing votes. She has to vote remotely, and I believe she is also not allowed to be in any of her committees. So essentially, they've removed a large, district from any representation, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they had to do this because she is transgender,
yeah,
and thus has thoughts on the bills that they're working on this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And has said, you know, that they have blood on their hands with this latest bill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost kind of getting to the point where what our government is doing to other members of the government, I mean, it kind of goes back to shit that would happen. You would expect this in Russia, you know, mm-hmm. before they started actually just pushing people off of balconies quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much longer before it happens? But yeah. we've got a lot of guns here, so maybe that's how it'll happen. I don't know. I think that it could, and that's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, it's rules that would have made sense when, like, people would regularly fight in the house.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff where it's like, well, this is clearly out of line. You know, we need to do something about this, but she just exists, and they're like, nope, you standing around wanting to talk, that's disruptive.
Yeah.
And, of course, your constituents come in to protest, and that's also disruptive.
She's not beating the shit out of people with a cane, although maybe we need to give her one.
Yeah, get one of those voting sticks that people in state houses use to vote for themselves or other people.
Yeah.
That's a really weird thing that people don't know about.
Don't these, like, state houses have, like, a ceremonial mace somewhere?
Right.
Like, pick that up and use that. Like, that's the whole, you know, that's the reason why those ceremonial maces exist in the first place. They're specifically meant to be, like, reminders of, like, hey, yeah, so this is the only weapon that's allowed in the house. Because it used to be that people used to bring their own weapons into it in, like, the old parliament days.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is also the state where their current governor suplexed a member of the press and still got elected.
Yep.
So
I have to wonder at what point, and is there any teeth that the federal government has to say, hey, state government, you're running yourself ass backwards, quit it, or we're going to come in and fix it. But I don't think that exists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything
like that. DOJ might have something, but it might have to be a very egregious example of it.
Yeah.
Mm. I think this is. I mean.
Yeah, possibly, but. They've also got a lot on their hands right now.
Taxation without fucking representation. I think that's pretty goddamn egregious. Didn't we have a whole fucking civil war over it?
Well, yeah, I mean, we had the revolution. Yeah.
The Revolutionary War. Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've been working on some of these states doing these transgender bills. So it's just a matter of time when they get to this stuff. What would help is if we had actual ethics in the Supreme Court so that we could get rid of these people with that are completely corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
They're corrupt and they're compromised.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on, because we got other shit we got to talk about. The House GOP barely passed the debt ceiling bill to cut a bunch of stuff. You know what one of the things they ended up cutting? Millions of dollars in funding from the VA.
Yeah. It's a bunch of stuff, and it's only passed by 2 votes, so that is a whole thing there where Matt Gaetz voted against it, Andy Biggs, who else, Ken Buck, and Tim Burchett. Mm-hmm. Not for any real reasons of, you know.
No, it's probably strategic, you know. They're up for election next, or they need a boost with their constituents. They knew it was going to pass, so they're going to throw a few people. A bone, basically. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this isn't going to get to the Senate because Senator Schumer has said, you know, we ain't doing this shit. And Biden's also said, we're not doing this. We're either passing, you know, a debt ceiling increase with no catches to it, or we're, you know, not doing this. Because your party's trying to hold the debt ceiling hostage and run this country into some bad places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't want to play ball with the other two branches of this decision here.
Yeah, well, don't play ball at this point. You know, I know there's a lot on the table here, but there's a whole lot more on the table if you do capitulate.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, and then we guess what, folks? We had another mass shooting this week. 5 people were fatally shot in their home after asking the neighbor to stop shooting while their baby was sleeping.
Oh, yep. Jesus.
Yeah, in Texas.
I didn't know about this.
In case you didn't know.
Of course it's Texas.
Yeah, Southeast Texas. A man who is firing rounds in his yard was asked by one of their neighbors to please stop so that their baby could, they're trying to get their baby to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided he hated this enough that infringed on his rights, I guess, enough that he went over to their house and literally used his AR-15 to shoot them point blank in the head and kill them. Including one of them was their 8-year-old child. The baby seems to be okay. I guess I'm not seeing it mentioned here at all. Though obviously, I assume the parents are dead. So,
good God.
Yeah, all 5 people had gunshot wounds to the head, adding that the shooter used an AR-15 style rifle. So, and he went on the lam, fled the scene, because he knew what he did was that bad. But I believe they're still searching for him, but they'll get him.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And this had not been a new thing. I think he'd been reported to the police before for firing his gun a bunch, you know, during the day.
Yeah. And now to an old asshole, one historical asshole, but they still exist and they just reared their ugly heads again. Wizards of the Coast hired a bunch of Pinkerton agents. You heard that right. We actually still have Pinkertons running around to recover a Magic the Gathering expansion a YouTuber purchased by accident, which claims he'd get big fines and jail time.
Yeah, this is a whole weird thing where
mm-hmm.
This YouTuber going by Old School MTG had managed to get an unreleased pack of Magic the Gathering sets here called March of the Machines, The Aftermath, which is an expansion of the what was called March of the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said basically that the guy he usually goes to does a lot of Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh cards mostly. So he thinks it was just accidental that he just grabbed a thing that said March of the Machine and didn't realize it was the new unreleased expansion and sold it to him early instead of in May in a couple of weeks here. So finding out that this happened because he was making videos being like, oh, wait, I got this new set that's not out yet kind of thing. He did a couple videos and then Wizards of the Coast sent people from the Pinkerton agency. And yeah, he said here, as soon as my wife answered the door, they aggressively asked for me by my full name, announced themselves as the Pinkerton agency, which I'm very familiar with their reputation, and said they were there to recover stolen goods. After his wife asked them to wait outside, he said they forced themselves at least partially through the door and prevented her from closing the door all the way. When he eventually got to the door, he says he assertively moved everyone outside. The agents, they needed to treat them with more respect. They eventually did dial it back and become more civil after that.
Mm-hmm.
But he said sort of in the process before that, they made his wife cry with these threats, claiming that that he could face between 1 and 10 years in jail, as well as getting fines that could result up into $200,000 in fines plus all legal fees. For being in possession of this stolen property, which is like it wasn't stolen. It was sold to him accidentally. So, you know, you need to get in touch with the retailer. And even then it's like, this is way overboard for what is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that apparently Wizards of the Coast got in contact with him after the fact. And that, you know, they've been very apologetic and all that. This guy even saying, like, a simple email or phone call would have been enough to get him to work with them on that. So there's no need to send such a notorious agency to my house to frighten my wife and threaten us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a whole thing. And then people started digging in and figuring out, like, this is not the first time Wizards of the Coast has done this with Pinkertons. And that's probably not that much of a surprise. Because yeah, this company, for what they used to be, is now largely like a security and like detective force kind of thing. Where you got enough money, you can hire them as like muscle to go get stuff for you or whatever you need. I'm sure they'll be very flexible for whatever they need to do. And it's like, this is ridiculous for what you people need to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And just further backs up the opinions that people have about Wizards of the Coast being just kind of a bunch of shitty bullies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There you go.
Mm. Yeah. But it's not all bad, because we do have some Heroes of the Week. And our first Heroes of the Week are the states of South Carolina and Nebraska. They actually failed to pass any strict abortion bans in those two states. Yes.
Yeah. Both of them each fell a single vote short of passing in their legislatures amid heated debates among Republicans. Yet another sign that abortion is becoming a difficult issue for the GOP.
Yeah.
As the last vote was cast in Nebraska, where abortion is currently banned after 20 weeks of pregnancy, cheers erupted outside the legislative chamber, with opponents of the bill waving signs and chanting, "Whose house? Our house." In South Carolina, Republican Senator Sandy Sen criticized Majority Leader Shane Massey for repeatedly taking us off a cliff on abortion. The only thing that we can do when you men in the chamber, metaphorically keep slapping women by raising abortion again and again and again, is for us to slap you back with our words. And he's a Republican. I think all the women in their Senate band together, which I think is mostly Republican women,
mm-hmm.
like to fight this. And it's like, says a lot about what's going on here when it's mm-hmm. Republican women fighting this stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good news for people in those states. They're already lots of crazy shit happening there. This is one less thing to worry about.
Yeah.
I guess until next time.
Mm-hmm. And now we've got also our other Hero of the Week is the governor of Colorado, who signed 4 gun control bills into law after the LGBTQ club shooting.
Yeah. This is good news. Their governor, Jared Polis, signed these. Gun rights groups sued to reverse 2 of the measures, one for raising the buying age for any gun from 18 to 21 and establishing a 3-day waiting period between the purchase and receipt of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
The court's already weighing lawsuits over such restrictions in other states. The new laws, which Democrats pushed through despite late-night filibusters from Republicans, are aimed at quelling rising suicides and youth violence, preventing mass shootings, and opening avenues for gun violence victims to sue the long-protected firearm industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, working through pretty quickly 5 months after the shooting in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see that the state where kind of the school shootings became a big deal back in 99 with the Columbine shooting, that they're finally getting some real stuff to help mitigate that stuff in the future.
Shame that it's taken literally a lifetime.
Yeah.
But with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the proper show proper. And our first story of the night is earlier this week, Fox News fired Tucker Carlson.
Yep.
And this was not a planned firing. It was not amicable. And I know this because they were still promoting his show all the way up to around 9:10 in the morning of that day.
Yeah.
And then around
his show on Friday, signed off like, "I will see you next week."
Yeah, he was going to be doing an interview with some sort of a Republican congressman or some over Monday evening. And then, boom.
Yep, and then he did this weird video from Seth Meyers' commentary on it is beautiful from some hidden basement somewhere.
Yeah.
I think it was his COVID shack where he did his shows there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, see you soon. Uh-huh, really? Are we going to?
Unfortunately, sure we probably are.
Find somewhere else to go.
Yeah, I mean, he's been getting offers from like Newsmax and freaking Russia Today. Freaking offered him.
Yeah,
he's probably and the thing is, he's probably going to go there, and he's probably going to be saying all the quiet parts out loud instead of just all the stuff that he's been, you know, having to kind of cover with dog whistles. Although dog whistles are pretty fucking loud. People have been wondering, like, why was it that he got fired? Like, what was the final straw? My view is that it was actually a few different things. First was, of course, the fact that, you know, they recently had the Dominion lawsuit get settled, which cost them close to $1 billion. And, you know, Tucker was one of the main sort of, I guess, sources of the cause of that lawsuit. And then, of course, there's the fact that Smartmatic still has their lawsuit coming for more money, and they've made it clear that they do not intend on settling like Dominion did. Then there's also the fact that apparently he's just not easy to work with, like, at all. He's very prima donna, and which, I mean, anybody who's followed his career should have figured that out by now.
I mean, anybody who wears the shoes that he does, you could just look at his feet and tell he's a goddamn prima donna.
And apparently the work environment there is just really hostile, not just misogynistic, but also nakedly anti-Semitic as well, which, again, not a big shock when you consider the stuff that he put out on his show. And, there's also just the fact that, and for the record, themselves have like a dirt file on the guy, because they work kind of like Scientology in that they basically collect shit on you so that if you ever leave the company and try to speak against them, they leak this stuff out to try and ruin your reputation. Granted, he didn't have much of a reputation to ruin, but you get the idea.
But he did have a huge following. We cannot discount that.
No, I mean, in fact, their ratings basically cratered after he left.
Yeah, but I don't think that Fox made this decision. I'm pretty sure it was fucking Rupert Murdoch.
It's very been widely reported that it was specifically an order from Murdoch himself.
It was too much shit.
Yeah, and apparently Tucker's not going to be first either. A bunch of other of the regulars there are worried that they're going to be next.
Well, is everybody speculating that Hannity is going to get chopped after? After the next lawsuit starts?
Well, no, because the thing about Hannity is that he really has no zone and plays ball. Because understand, Fox has been trying to move away from Trump towards more DeSantis. And part of the reason that another reason they ended up getting rid of Tucker is because Tucker wouldn't play ball. He was still loyal to Trump. At least, you know, publicly. In private,
he was still just pushing him. Yeah. And I think that a lot of the personal communications, I think that this is probably the straw that broke the back for Rupert Murdoch, when all of the personal texts, you know, back and forth in group came out and how they really thought off the air. It just probably was, I think that just didn't sit well with Rupert Murdoch. Not that I give a fuck, but he probably just knee-jerk reaction said, you know what, that's it, we're done here.
Yeah. And the reason Hannity probably isn't going to, doesn't really give a shit either way. He'll do whatever Rupert says. But there's been talk like Maria Barber will be the next to go. I've heard rumors here or there that Jeanine Pirro might go as well. That might be wishful thinking on my part, though. Eventually it just got to the point Murdoch was like, you know what, this fucker's costing us money, so he's got to go.
Yeah, I think most of it's probably the toxic work environment, because that's something that they don't want to have to pay for
again,
the aftermath of that stuff
again.
And
hi, Chris.
him talking so much shit to about the boss, about the Murdochs.
Yeah.
It's not a great thing to do when you work for them.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people are so stupid to put shit in writing that should just be spoken words.
Because you think you're impenetrable.
Ego. I guess they do. Yeah.
Ego.
I guess they do. Although, yeah, spoken words are not safe so much anymore, but yeah.
And probably what's going to happen is that place Tucker with another talking head that isn't as independent-minded as Tucker is, and he's probably going to say a lot of this. He or she will probably end up saying a lot of the same shit, and Tucker will end up going to a smaller but more independent, you know, network, you know, if they can pay him the money and if they can survive, because let's be honest, both Newsmax and OAN aren't really doing too well financially.
Yeah. And we're about to see the same with Fox, which,
yeah,
I mean, we can only get so excited.
I think the rumor is that Tulsi Gabbard might be the replacement for Tucker Carlson since she's been on Fox a lot of late.
Yeah.
And that would be a way to get a little more variety of having, you know, a woman like that, especially somebody who's been in Congress and all that.
Yeah. Until they find out that she's actually, you know, Indian American.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Tulsi isn't her real name.
Well, isn't she Samoa, right?
No, I mean, Tulsi is Indian in that, I mean, she's, well, hold on. She was originally born, she's Samoan.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so. I mean, there was a lot of shit about that when she was first running. People were, what do you mean? She can't run. She's not. You goddamn idiots. Yeah, she's American.
Yeah, American Samoa is American territory. She is an American citizen. Same as like if somebody from Puerto Rico decided to run for president. They could run. Puerto Ricans are American citizens.
But they still discriminate against them pretty bad. But it was kind of, I thought it was common knowledge, but I have to admit that I do stay in a bubble.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Joe Sixpack is out there thinking or was thinking. Yeah. Well, God, that was before the pandemic. That was five lifetimes ago.
Yeah.
So technically, people born in American Samoa are nationals, not citizens.
Yeah.
But one of her parents was born here.
Yeah.
Like on the mainland, right?
Yeah. Which, yep, yeah.
A national and a citizen if you're born to a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
So she's both.
Yeah. But anyway, it wasn't just Fox News that ended up having Bloody Monday, as they're now, because on the same day that Tucker got the axe, CNN fired Don Lemon.
Yeah.
For a couple of different reasons. One of them being he's fucking insufferable.
Yeah, he seems to have a lot of issues. Makes a lot of misogynistic remarks to other women that he works with.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Also, they were paying him like a shit ton of money to host a show that just cratered in the ratings that like nobody watched. So yeah,
for much less egregious reasons as Tucker Carlson, but similar like ego issues and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
It'll make it easier for CNN to move towards the right some more as a result. So
yeah, it's what they're trying to do. But yeah, I fucking love it when people say, you know, CNN and MSNBC represent the American left. Fuck no. Those fuckers represent only one thing, and that's the corporate establishment.
Guess who else worked at those places?
Pretty much most of the people at Fox News.
Well, I mean, Tucker Carlson's been fired from both of those places.
Yeah, he's literally, he's like the guy to be known from being fired from all three major news networks.
Yeah, he's got the shitty EGOT of getting fired from the major news networks.
Yeah. And you know, somewhere Jon Stewart was like, did I fucking call it or what?
Yeah.
But yeah, so CNN fired Dime Lemon. That happened. But obviously, it was the Tucker one that ended up, you know, taking up most of the oxygen because of just shitty of a human being he is and how big the damage is that he's caused to American politics. But at least now he's not in such an easy place that my mom can keep watching him.
Thank goodness. Oh, I can't even imagine how that would make your blood boil.
Yeah, I just pretend it wasn't happening. Yeah. She tried to get me to watch him after he did that interview, that first part of that interview with Elon Musk. And then the episode started with them talking about that thing that happened at that. You probably know, considering you live there. That teen party in that park in Chicago that ended up getting out of and some people like destroyed some cars.
How long ago was this? Was it like last weekend? Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm aware of the whole, oh shit, yeah. Because I was seriously like, that. Those were safe places to go. I was going to be in the loop picking up something that night. And the guy never responded to give me the address. I was ready to go. Yeah. And I figured out why he didn't respond.
Yeah. And so he tried to make this out as like it was Western. And people are actively trying to do this because they want to kill Westerns. And I was like, nope, not listening to that shit. It was a teen party that got out of hand. It isn't the goddamn fall of Rome.
God, Elon Musk, remember when I get to this reason, he's like, well, if you can prove that, you know, I got my money from an emerald mine, his dad was like, oh, can I get in on this?
Yeah, because I can totally prove that that's what. But anyway. Moving on to some more bullshit, the Texas Department of Agriculture recently instituted a new dress code requiring people to dress based on, quote, biological gender, because it's fucking Texas.
Is important, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what the fuck is dressing based on biological gender? Because are you saying that women can't wear pants and, you know, dress shirts and that?
Mm-hmm.
We're getting dangerously fucking close.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're trying to say. There's no goddamn way. There's no way. They just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're mandating that they abide by it in a manner consistent with their biological gender. An ACLU attorney says it violates federal law that bans employment discrimination based on one's sexual orientation or gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
This memo from April 13th, first obtained by the Texas Observer. The new dress code handed down by Sid Miller, the state's agriculture commissioner, is required by all employees as part of a dress code and grooming policy. Employees are expected to comply with the dress code in a manner consistent with their biological gender.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the picture they have on file for him is him in a fucking cowboy hat.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
With a gun pin on him as well.
Yep.
So it's like basically that's the Texas businessman from The Simpsons.
Yep.
Who enters every scene shooting guns.
Yep.
And they wonder why the rest of the world views Americans as basically jacking off with their guns. We're not doing a whole fucking lot to undo that image.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a bad visual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on from there, guess what? First Republic Bank is back in financial trouble once again. Oh, yeah.
Yep. They released their earnings report for the first 3 months of the year, and those results stunned Wall Street. They said it lost more than 40% of its deposits in March as customers moved billions of dollars elsewhere. That is the whole big thing. Yeah, there at one point during the trading day, shares dropped below $5. Just 6 months ago, the First Republic shares are trading at nearly $150.
Mm-hmm.
And on Wednesday, the stock closed down almost 30% at $5.69. And so, yeah, it seems like the government's going to have to get involved again. I think they've announced since this bit of news came out that they are going to be getting involved in this again.
Yep.
To ensure people's deposits and whatnot. So, that's going to be more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's happening again. So, yeah. And then we got another bit of financial chicanery. Bed Bath & Beyond have officially filed for bankruptcy protection. What a fucking shock.
Yeah, right.
We talked about this a few months ago, that they were on the verge of this because they basically took all the profit they could have used to sort of shelter themselves during the pandemic and said, what if we do stock buybacks?
Yep.
And essentially give it all to our shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And then when...
So a planned liquidation of the company.
Yeah. And they had a big issue where, you know, when the pandemic hit, they were sort of in the middle of switching over from mostly, you know, big retailers supplying goods for them to like smaller private companies and all this kind of overhaul of their stores and as such. But then the pandemic hit and it's like, oh, there goes any chance of us selling any of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. So yeah, there's going to be, it's 360 Bed Bath & Beyond stores, 120 Bye Bye Baby stores will remain open, but will shutter over time. Starting on Wednesday, April 26th, the chain will stop accepting coupons and discounts, and sales will be final. Gift cards are expected to stay valid through May 8th. So if you are unfortunate enough to have that, go spend it immediately.
Yeah.
And so much so that, you know, workers are very like, well, what the fuck do we do?
Yeah.
Because there's not much for them to do now at this point, especially when traffic's going to go off a cliff.
Yeah.
There. Man. So at one point they were the dominant category killers, they describe it here, that absorbed or outlived many early rivals. They had nearly 1,500 stores as of 2018. But its website has been shit. And yeah, they're that company that you get coupons in the mail and you're like, oh, maybe if I ever think about it.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. But now, yeah, they've just been in bad place for the last few years. And they decided not to put any of their money into keeping the business alive.
Yeah.
To weather all these changes they were making. Yeah, it was the middle of an overhaul that involved replacing big-name brands with more profitable private brands. Tragedy exacerbated the industry-wide supply chain crisis, leaving top products like KitchenAid mixers missing from Bed Bath's shelves. So,
yeah. Oh, all the good shit was always missing. You can get anything from, like, Dyson or KitchenAid or, like, La Creuset or all the good shit you couldn't do.
Yeah, we had one of these... in the big shopping center, and it got replaced by an At Home, which is the same exact idea.
But like tremendously cheaper.
Yeah. They just moved right in, like overhauled the shopping center they were in for that spot. I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Place with the exact same shit. So.
Yep.
Well,
and, And here's another thing, a little flash from the, past. You remember back when Trump was president and he talked about building the wall, and of course they never got around to actually building the wall because it was all bullshit from the beginning. So Steve Bannon and this other guy got together and founded a quote-unquote charity called We Build the Wall that ended up being a giant fucking scam. Yeah, well, the founder of that group has been sentenced to 4 years in prison.
Yeah, 4 years and 3 months. Stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars from donors. Brian Cole Fage, a decorated Air Force veteran who lost both of his legs and an arm in the Iraq War, pleaded guilty for his role in siphoning donations from the We Build the Wall campaign. And yeah, co-defendant financier Andrew Badalato was also sentenced to 3 years for aiding the effort. He had also pleaded guilty. A third man that was also involved, Colorado businessman Tim Shea, won't be sentenced until June. Yeah, those first two guys are ordered to pay $25 million in restitution to the victims. But yeah, these people all worked with Steve Bannon. He was initially arrested aboard a luxury yacht and faced federal fraud charges along with the other men. Oh, this is why he's not Because Trump pardoned him during his final hours in office.
Yep.
So that's why he's not going to get anything out of this.
Yep.
Yeah, now there's, let's see, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg brought new state charges against Bannon last year. He's awaiting trial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, presidential pardons only apply to federal crimes, not state offenses.
Yep.
And he also got held in contempt of court for refusing to testify for the Congress over the January 6th insurrection. So that's also a thing that will probably happen at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah. And now moving on to a story that is just phenomenally fucking stupid. And frankly, just reminder that social media is not a good representation of the real world. Especially fucking Twitter. As I have to remind people, Twitter is only like the fifth most popular social media app used. And of that, only roughly like 10% of its user base actually regularly produces any content for the platform. So you're basically listening to a minority of a minority. But anyway, so Anheuser-Busch, which of course is the famous American brewery, whether or not their beer is actually any good or not, well, that's up to taste. But they decided to send a personalized Bud Light can to Dylan Mulvaney, who is a famous transgender influencer on I think it's TikTok or is it Instagram? One or the other.
Instagram.
Instagram. You know, she posted a whole video about it. She's like, oh, this is so awesome. I didn't know they would do this. And this is awesome. Thank you, guys. And then all the usual suspects went and lost their fucking minds. And it makes you remember that, oh, yeah, about a good chunk of America's populace is fucking brain dead.
Yeah. Yeah, they did this to celebrate a March Madness contest they were running, a sweepstakes challenge where people could win $15,000 from Bud Light by sending in videos of themselves carrying a lot of beers, as well as her first year of transitioning into womanhood. One of the cans featured her image. This was a gift can, remember?
Yeah, not mass-produced, just made specifically for her.
Yeah, for this video, or she used it in the video. But that made people mad, because, like, how dare they use, you know, a transgender woman on my beer cans?
Yeah.
Again, they weren't for sale. But people started freaking the fuck out that, you know, the thing is, anytime like a transgender woman or a person that is used for advertising campaigns for these big companies, people freak out, especially if it's for, you know, female holidays, that kind of stuff. It's like, how dare they put, you know, what they say is like, how dare they put a man on the on, you know, here for Mother's Day or whatever, you know, it's like, yeah, just show how ugly an asshole you are.
Yep.
You can just avoid buying, you know, the chocolate bars or whatever. You know,
yeah. It's
perfectly fine.
But no, they go out of their way to actually purchase this shit in bulk and then destroy it.
Yeah, Kid Rock did a whole video of him shooting up a bunch of cans.
Yeah.
Travis Tritt made tweets saying, you know, in full disclosure, I was on a tour sponsored by Budweiser in the 90s. Uh-huh. That was when Anheuser-Busch was American-owned. Great American company that later sold out to the Europeans and became unrecognizable to the American consumer. Such a shame.
Motherfucker, the game was the fucking company was started by European immigrants.
Yeah.
It's that's why they're Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah. Exactly. Anheuser-Busch are not WASP names, dude.
Yeah. So then he said, like, oh, we're gonna delete, you know, Bud Lights from our tour riders, kind of thing. And yeah, Ben Shapiro complained about this. Well, folks, our culture has now decided men are women and women are men. Well, you must be forced to consume products that say so.
Yeah, well, that's Ben Shapiro. He's paid to have a shitty opinion.
Yeah, he seems to not be much of a Bud Light fan himself, so he probably doesn't have much to boycott, as he said. I understand Bud Light is piss water masquerading as beer, so I guess that, you know, it's sort of trans beer.
Yeah.
Which fuck is like, that yeah.
fucker.
Oh, fuck him. Yeah.
But yeah.
Sorry.
That was the whole thing.
It's the usual suspects. You know, fucking Donald Trump Jr. being his usual cokehead asshole self.
Yeah. But they ended up capitulating in putting out a statement on April 14th that was as tepid as it could be, but still supporting, you know, the people that are complaining. Yeah. And I believe the two people are behind the little marketing campaign for the Dylan Mulvaney stuff got put on paid leave. Feel bad for execs getting put on paid leave. So,
yeah.
But they're like, we're honored to be part of the fabric of this country. Anheuser-Busch employs more than 18,000 people and our independent distributors employ an additional 47,000 valued colleagues. We have thousands of partners, millions of fans, and a proud history supporting our communities, military, first responders, sports fans, and hardworking Americans everywhere. We never intended to be part of a discussion that divides people. We are in the business of bringing people together over a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, that is as milquetoast as it gets for any sort of statement. And you know how they got rewarded for this? They got people making death threats against their factories.
Yep.
So congratulations, Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch. You know, you've sided with these people that you capitulated to them and they still threaten to kill you.
Yeah. You know, it didn't really hurt their bottom line much either. Their stock like temporarily went down a little bit and then it went right back up. So
guess what? Destroying that beer, they still got money for it. You just didn't get to drink it.
I swear to God, these fuckers are the sheep that they keep saying we are.
Like when they burned their Nike shoes, like you didn't have to buy more, but burning them just punishes you.
Yeah. Right?
Like there's a whole video of H Bomber Guy talking about this.
Yeah.
And the Keurig stuff. And all that. And it's like, you're marketing them by being outraged. That's why they are doing this, what they call pink washing, which is acting like they support, you know, transgender and LGBTQ people to, you know, make their brand look better.
Yeah. In fact, I think Pride Month comes up in a couple months. You're going to start seeing all that shit again.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so yeah, it was really stupid. And the worst part is that it put Dylan Mulvaney in danger because, as far as I know, she is a sweet lady who has never hurt anybody and is always relentlessly positive. And yeah. But anyway, moving on from there. A Japanese company lost contact with its lunar spacecraft just as it was about to.
They were attempting to land a lunar spacecraft on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
They were potentially going to be the first private company to land a spacecraft on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But then as it was descending the final 33 feet, traveling at about 16 miles an hour, flight controllers peered at their screens in Tokyo, expressionless as minutes went by with no word from the lander, which is presumed to have been crashed.
Yeah.
That's sucks for them, but hey, that... No, you can always learn more from that stuff. It was a 7-foot lander, carried a mini lunar rover for the United Arab Emirates and a toy-like robot from Japan designed to roll around in the moon dust.
Mm-hmm.
There were also items from private customers on board. Named Hakuto, Japanese for white rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
It had targeted Atlas crater in the northeastern section of the moon's near side, more than 50 miles across and just over 1 mile deep. That's sad to see, but with this kind of stuff, it's always good data to get either way.
Mm-hmm. But, And now we're moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. And the first is that Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, will appear on Disney Plus on May 17th. Yeah, that movie didn't do too well financially, did it?
Yeah, it did fine. I don't know if it was a consequence of when it launched or whatever, but yeah, it just kind of hit. People kind of liked it, but it was kind of like the other Ant-Man movies where it's like, it was all right.
Yeah.
Had some nice moments, but not something that like causes people to fall all over themselves in praising.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. There you go.
But yeah, so that happened. That's happening. And then, of course, there's this next one. Season 3 of The Witcher will be split up into two parts, releasing June 29th and July 27th. Those of you who don't remember, the main star of that has left that show. So,
yeah, this is Henry Cavill's last season.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, 5 episodes in Volume 1. That'll be out June 29th. Volume 2, which includes the final 3 episodes, will be out July 27th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they put out a little teaser video of it. So if you want to get a little taste of what's going to be in there, I think they're covering the Wild Hunt stuff that's in The Witcher 3.
Yep.
So there you go for that.
Yeah. And then we got a new season of Black Mirror. Black Mirror returns for season 6 on Netflix in June.
Yep. They've got a bunch of people appearing in this season. But it's been the first season in at least a few years. So it's a big deal. We have a bunch of people here. Aaron Paul. There's Himesh Patel, Josh Hartnett, Michael Cera, Rob Delaney, Papa Esidu, Rory Culkin, Salma Hayek, Zazie Beetz. They got a teaser showing off a little bit of a bunch of the different stuff going on in there, but yeah, it'll be out in June. No specific date yet, but just the month that'll be out there. So that's it. But that'll be cool.
All right. Cool. And we also got a teaser for Peacock's television version of Twisted Metal. Yes.
Yeah.
That Twisted Metal. They are making a TV series.
Yeah. It'll be out July 27th on Peacock. Half-hour live-action TV series. Has Anthony Mackie as the star, somebody who's sort of an outsider of, I guess, the Twisted Metal thing. And he's hired to deliver a mysterious package across this wasteland and try to avoid, you know, all the dangers that are happening. I believe Stephanie Beatriz is also in this, though I don't think they've shown her in any of the footage yet.
Yeah, and let's see. We got a trailer for The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Yeah.
This is the most recent book that is essentially a prequel to the original stuff. It's essentially The Rise of Snow. As somebody that worked on the games before becoming president. That'll be out November 17th. Looks pretty decent.
Yeah. And finally, last but not least, we got a trailer for Taika Waititi's next film, Next Goal Wins.
Yeah, sort of based on a real event. Follows the American Samoa soccer team who was infamous for their brutal 31-0 FIFA loss in 2001. So this features Michael Fassbender playing a coach that comes in to coach the American Samoa soccer team after that, as they joke that they just want to get one goal.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. But yeah, that'll be out November 17th in theaters. So that looks pretty good.
It's, you know, Taika Waititi, he's does good movies and he's a pretty funny guy. So he can probably pull off something pretty good. But I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. So we'd like to remind all of our listeners to get a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, and get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. Let's weekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if you don't see us on there, just wait a few minutes. We will be as soon as we find out that it exists. We are inevitable, and we spread. We're kind of like herpes that way, but digitally. And, you know, not as unpleasant and unsightly. I need to stop. I'm really digging myself in a hole here. But yes, if you enjoyed what you heard tonight listening to this, please do not hesitate to spread the word. Tell your family, your friends, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and just a regular guy on the street. Hell, maybe random strangers. Just yell it at them. You know, I mean, they may not remember you, but they'll definitely remember you were yelling at them in their faces. You know? And, yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. We'll see you all next week, hopefully. And it'll be a new month then, and we'll be getting closer into summer. Summer's getting close. And you know what that means? Me trying to do everything I can to avoid not going outside for a whole season. But until then, good night, everybody.